They were just teenage girls, bright, beautiful, and full of American dreams. Amina and Sarah Syed wanted to go to college, fall in love, and choose their own future. But in their father's eyes, that made them traitors. On New Year's Day 2008, the girls were lured into their father's taxi in Irving, Texas. Minutes later, both were shot multiple times, execution style. One of them, still alive, managed to call 911 and whisper, "Help, my dad shot me." The killer? Yasser Abdel Syed, their own father. He claimed it was an honor killing. And then, he vanished. For 12 years. This wasn't just a family tragedy, it was a cultural lightning rod. People argued, was this an act of domestic violence cloaked in religion, or the deadly consequences of a culture clash in the heart of America? And perhaps most chilling of all, how did he evade capture for over a decade while hiding in plain sight? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. You're bringing shame to this family. It started with small things. Jeans instead of traditional dresses. Makeup instead of modesty. Friendships with boys instead of arranged futures. Amina and Sarah Syed were teenagers growing up in Texas, caught between two worlds. The expectations of their conservative Egyptian father, Yasser Abdel Syed, and the freedom they tasted every day as American girls. Yasser was a domineering figure. Towering, strict, and inflexible, he controlled nearly every aspect of his family's life. He didn't just supervise his daughters, he surveilled them. He installed hidden cameras, read their text messages, and frequently accused them of shaming the family. In his eyes, a smile at a male classmate was betrayal. A boyfriend? An unforgivable sin. Amina, the elder of the two, was defiant. Bold. She had dreams of becoming a doctor. She spoke fluent English, loved American pop culture, and confided in friends that she was afraid of her father. Sarah, younger and quieter, followed her sister's lead, but tried to keep peace at home. She was gentle, loved animals, and wanted to work with children. The girls lived a double life. At home, they conformed. Headscarves, modesty, obedience. Outside, they laughed, flirted, and texted boyfriends under desks. Amina, especially, kept a secret. She was in love with a boy named Joseph Moreno. Her father had threatened to kill her if she ever dated, but she risked everything anyway. What their classmates didn't know was that behind the smiles and selfies was a home filled with fear. In 1999, when Amina was only 9, she confided in a school counselor that her father had sexually abused her. Sarah confirmed the abuse. Charges were filed, but later both girls recanted, allegedly under pressure from their mother, Patricia. The case collapsed. Yasser walked free. But the girls never forgot. They lived under psychological siege, terrified of what would happen if their father ever discovered the truth about their lives. By 2007, things had reached a boiling point. Amina and Sarah confided in friends and teachers that they feared for their lives. Amina wrote in emails that her father had threatened to kill them if they dishonored the family. One teacher later said she begged Amina not to go home. Another friend recalled Amina saying, "If I ever disappear, don't let it go." That December, the girls ran away, with help from their boyfriends and their mother. They made it to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and for a brief moment, they were free. Then came the call that would seal their fate. Patricia Syed, abused wife, terrified mother, begged the girls to come back. She said Yasser was sorry, that he wanted to make peace, that they would only be home for Christmas. Amina didn't want to go. She cried, pleaded. "He's going to kill us," she said. But Patricia insisted, and eventually, Sarah agreed. Amina, against her instincts, followed. On New Year's Day 2008, Yasser asked his daughters to get into his taxi. He told Patricia he was taking them to dinner, but instead, he drove them to Irving, Texas, parked near a hotel, and opened fire. Sarah was shot 9 times. Amina, twice. Somehow, Sarah managed to call 911 with her final breath. Her voice was weak, but unmistakable. "Help. My dad shot me. I'm dying." By the time police arrived, both girls were dead. and Yasser Abdel Said had vanished. The case exploded across the national media. The term honor killing was used widely, sparking debates about cultural conflict, immigrant integration, and domestic violence. But at its core, this was not a foreign tradition. It was a father killing his daughters because they dared to live their own lives. The FBI launched a manhunt. Yasser Abdel Said was placed on the 10 most wanted list. Interpol issued a red notice. The reward grew to 100,000 lows. But for 12 years, there was nothing. No sightings, no leads, only grief. The girl's brother, Islam Said, defended their father. So did some relatives. Others, including Patricia, gave conflicting stories. Was she manipulated, threatened, or complicit? The truth was murky, but the horror was undeniable. Amina and Sarah were buried side by side, two young women silenced for wanting to live free, and the man who murdered them. He disappeared into the shadows. Chapter 2. A Killer in the Family. For 12 long years, Yasser Abdel Said vanished off the face of the earth. There were no confirmed sightings, no arrests, and no trail of transactions. He had become a ghost. But the truth was even more chilling than anyone suspected. He hadn't vanished into another country, nor had he assumed a new identity. He had never even left Texas. Law enforcement had always believed Yasser may have fled to Egypt using his connections and Arabic fluency, but they were wrong. He had been hiding in plain sight, sheltered by the one thing that allowed him to disappear: his family. FBI surveillance eventually uncovered that Yasser's son, Islam Said, and his brother, Yassane Said, had been helping him. Not only did they allegedly provide him with shelter, but they also moved him between homes, fed him, and kept him insulated from detection. They were his enablers, his accomplices. Authorities now believe Yasser rarely left the properties where he was hiding. He would sleep during the day and stay up at night, always paranoid. He never used electronics. He stayed away from windows. For over a decade, he survived by clinging to the loyalty of those who should have turned him in. Meanwhile, Patricia Said, the girl's mother, had become an object of intense scrutiny. Public outrage burned at her refusal to press charges after the abuse allegations in 1999. People questioned how she could take her daughters back into the arms of the very man they feared. But Patricia gave conflicting interviews. In some, she portrayed herself as a battered woman, manipulated and afraid. In others, she appeared to make excuses for Yasser. She later claimed she had no idea he would kill them. The community wasn't convinced. Amina's boyfriend, Joseph Moreno, was left broken. He and Amina had made plans to escape Texas permanently. They wanted to marry, start a new life. Amina had even emailed him goodbye from Tulsa, saying she didn't want to go back. "My mom is forcing me," she wrote. "I know something bad is going to happen." He'd never see her again. Teachers who once tried to intervene were devastated. One former instructor said, "We all failed them, the system, the school, everyone." Protective services had been contacted before the murders, but nothing came of it. This wasn't just a personal tragedy, it was a systemic one. The warning signs were everywhere, they just weren't heeded. In 2014, the FBI released age progression images of Yasser. He was aging, likely thin, still possibly in Texas. They never gave up the chase. Years of investigation paid off in August 2020 when agents finally tracked Yasser down to a house in Justin, Texas, just 35 miles from where he killed his daughters. He was arrested without incident. The home was a modest suburban structure, belonging to his son and brother. Yasser had been hiding in a crawl space. There were surveillance monitors, food supplies, and a bedroll. He looked thinner, his hair grayer, but the fire in his eyes was still there. When authorities placed him in handcuffs, they weren't just detaining a fugitive. They were unraveling a family-wide conspiracy. Both Islam and Yassane Said were arrested and charged with harboring a fugitive. Prosecutors painted a picture of calculated deception, alleging the men lied to federal agents, created false alibis, and actively protected Yasser despite knowing the horrific nature of his crimes. It was the final betrayal. The family that once shielded their daughters from American influence now stood exposed for shielding a killer from justice. In jail, Yasser remained defiant. He denied killing Amina and Sarah, despite overwhelming evidence. He claimed he was being framed, that he was the victim. But the 911 call, the bullet wounds, the mounting witness, testimonies, none of it could be denied. In August 2022, Yasser Abdel Saeed was found guilty of capital murder and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. For the families who had waited over a decade, it was the justice they feared would never come. But justice couldn't bring back the girls. Amina, with her radiant confidence, Sarah with her quiet strength, both buried before they ever got to live. Their story became more than a murder case. It became a rallying cry about the dangers of control disguised as culture, about daughters who never had the right to choose, about institutions that didn't listen until it was too late, and about how sometimes the most dangerous place a girl can be is her own home. Chapter 3. After the Silence. The trial of Yasser Abdel Saeed was more than a courtroom drama. It was a confrontation with a brutal truth, that Amina and Sarah were failed at every turn. Prosecutors laid out a narrative that left no room for doubt. The girls lived in fear. They cried for help. They made plans to escape. And in the end, their cries went unanswered until it was too late. The evidence was overwhelming. Cell phone records, eyewitness testimonies, the chilling 911 call, and perhaps the most damning, Amina's and Sarah's own words, written in messages, emails, and school essays, begging not to be forced back home. Their voices echoed through the courtroom. During sentencing, Amina and Sarah's surviving relatives wept silently as the verdict was read. Patricia Saeed, their mother, sat in the gallery, expression unreadable. Some in the courtroom still viewed her with empathy, others with quiet fury. She had been both mother and witness, both protector and, many believed, the one who led them back to the man they feared most. In interviews following Yasser's conviction, Joseph Moreno, Amina's former boyfriend, shared how her death shattered him. "She was the love of my life," he said. "We had a future planned, and it was taken. All because she wanted freedom." The trial also became a flashpoint in the ongoing debate about honor killings in the West. Many activists rejected the term entirely, arguing that what happened to Amina and Sarah wasn't about honor. It was about control, about a man who couldn't stand the idea of losing power over his daughters, about a system that hesitated to intervene when culture was used as a shield. "This was domestic violence, plain and simple," one women's rights advocate told reporters. "It doesn't matter if he was Egyptian, American, Christian, or Muslim. When a man kills his daughters to control them, that's not culture. That's murder." But others saw the case as a wake-up call, proof that cultural and religious extremism can be twisted into justification for horrific acts, and that Western societies need better tools to protect vulnerable women trapped between worlds. The murder of Amina and Sarah became a rallying cry in international advocacy circles. Nonprofits launched scholarships in their names. Teachers in Texas began holding awareness seminars. Law enforcement agencies reviewed how they handled domestic abuse complaints with cross-cultural dimensions. And in 2022, after Yasser was sentenced to life in prison, the FBI issued a quiet but pointed internal review. How did it take 12 years to find a man hiding in plain sight, sheltered by his own blood? The answer was chilling, because nobody wanted to look too closely at the people who said they were just protecting their family. Today, Amina and Sarah Saeed rest in a quiet cemetery in Texas, side by side in a shared grave. Visitors often leave flowers, letters, and handwritten notes that say things like, "You mattered. I wish we had done more. You deserved to grow old." Their deaths weren't just tragic, they were preventable. The system saw the warning signs. So did friends, teachers, and neighbors. Yet the machine that should have protected them stalled under the weight of doubt, cultural hesitation, and the false promises of a dangerous man. Yasser Abdel Saeed will die in prison. But his conviction is not the end of this story. The real question now is, will we listen next time? Will we believe the girl who says she's afraid to go home? Will we challenge harmful beliefs masquerading as tradition even when it's uncomfortable? Because silence has a cost. And its price, in this case, was the lives of two beautiful, brave young women who wanted nothing more than the right to choose their own path. May we never let their voices be ignored again.